Welcome to the China Smart State podcast, produced by the Leiden Asia Center in association with the DigiChina project at Stanford University. This podcast is all about the digital transformation of China in all its complexity and how it affects the politics, economy, and society of this rapidly emerging cyberpower. I am Hochir Kremers, your host. My co-host today is Linda van der Horst.
Hi, Archer. I'm delighted to be here today.
Now, Linda wears many hats. By day, she works for the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but she's also writing a PhD on the Digital Silk Road. Obviously, anything Linda says in this podcast is her personal opinion and does not represent the Dutch government's position. And it's an absolute pleasure to talk today to a young and promising scholar, Fatoumata Diallo.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very pleased to join the conversation today.
Fatoumata works at ISDP Stockholm China Center, where she's a project manager and research fellow. She has a broad range of interests in domestic Chinese politics, which includes urbanization and, relevant to this podcast, smart cities. Because today we're going to talk about the biggest smart city project that's going on in China, the Xiong'an New Area. One of these, you know, big mega projects that very often when we talk about smart cities in China, we immediately think about surveillance and social control. But Fatoumata, is this true? Or this Xiong'an New Area as an idea of a smart city, what is this about?
So this Xiong'an New Area, it's a national level district that is still being developed. It's in China's Hebei province, south of Beijing. And the project was launched in 2017 at the initiative of President Xi Jinping himself. The idea behind this was to combine three rather laggard rural counties to form a new economic and development zone. The long-term goal was to convert Xiong'an into a green, modern, and technology-oriented model city by 2035, more or less.
What does it mean, a green and inclusive, and what did you say, a sustainable modern city?
The sustainable part mostly is trying to integrate some smart solutions through technology so that the city can thrive and also avoid some of the big city diseases that has plagued China's urban development in the past.
And it was a blank slate, right, when they started? I mean, it was just flat countryside a few years ago.
Yes, I think it's quite an impressive project because it was started completely from scratch. And President Xi Jinping kind of had this vision, and there were several incentives for the creation of the city. First, I think he wanted to leave his political imprints, just like his predecessors Deng Xiaoping or Jiang Zemin did with the Shenzhen Special Economic Zone or the Pudong area in Shanghai. And also the choice of Hebei was quite symbolic because this is where President Xi Jinping started his career, and it's a very poor area of China. So I think he also wanted to play on this populist narrative and try to maybe gain more popularity by transforming this poor area of China into a new vibrant innovation hub.
So he set himself quite a difficult challenge there with very high aims. It's only been going on for a few years now. What have they been doing?
Well, at this point, yes, it started, as I said before, in 2017. And basically, they started to build the physical infrastructure first. So actually, I visited Xiong'an in 2018, so 1 year after they started construction. And by then, they had already achieved quite a lot in terms of building the core common center that will serve as an eye for the rest of the city. And recently, they have also achieved new milestones. For example, they wanted to connect Beijing with Xiong'an through a railway, and this one was inaugurated very recently. So now you can join the city within maybe 50 minutes, which is a big achievement.
That's very impressive, yes. What do you mean by the I, the Common Service Center? Is that important for the smart aspect of the city?
Yes, at this point, it's mostly the physical infrastructure that was developed. But in the future, what they envisioned was to have a twin infrastructure, so physical and digital infrastructure that would be integrated. And with that, they are using Internet of Things, cloud computing, big data, all of these technologies to develop a new city brain, basically, that will facilitate city management over the long term.
So how does this smart city of Zhong'an, new area, compare to the other smart cities? Why is this one so special?
Well, I think that compared to, for example, Shenzhen and Shanghai, Xi'an is completely different because it's also built from scratch. But before, maybe the objectives of the leadership were quite different, and it was mostly about economic development within the country. Now what we want to do is more like promoting China's position as a global leader in technology and also innovation.
But it's really interesting because, you know, we're talking about, on the one hand, we're talking about, you know, big infrastructure. And I think, you know, we can all imagine this, the sort of the typical pictures that we get from, you know, these Chinese new cities, like we've had Shenzhen, like we've had the Pudong area of Shanghai in the past. But I'd still like to push a little bit on this whole idea of, you know, smartness. What is the whole idea of the digital infrastructure? Because, you know, we're talking about city brain, we're talking about data. And obviously, a lot of the dystopian discussion that we have here is about, you know, cameras on every face with facial recognition plugged into that, you know, caricatural version of the social credit system where you're immediately assessed and scored in everything that you do? Or is this about sort of more pedestrian stuff, sort of more banal stuff like figuring out how to organize the traffic lights and the public transport routes and energy supply and all of that? What is this digital side? What is it about?
Or is it both?
Or is it both? Yes.
Well, I think that it's very much both. On the one hand, I think that there was a tipping point around 2010 or so in China where the leadership realized that the past strategy that they relied on, urbanization and industrialization that was really fast, although it helped China's economic growth, it also created some very deep imbalances and challenges that if left unaddressed, they would put strains on the future development prospects of the country. So for example, environmental issues, poor living conditions in urban areas, air pollution, water scarcity, all of this. So because of this, they wanted to go towards more human-centered urban planning policies, which would improve the living condition of urban residents and deliver more equitable access to social benefits and public services. So that's one big part of it, human-centered solutions. The other component, I think, is because of the environmental concerns, there's a major emphasis placed on developing low carbon or greener solutions, at least. So that's two major points. And at the same time, China is at a crossroad where it's trying to transition to a new model. And for example, by 2030, it's hoping to raise its urbanization level to 70%. So currently, there's a lot of policies to integrate rural residents into urban areas. And at the end of the day, we would probably see 1 billion people living in cities by 2030. So the strive for a more sustainable, greener and efficient urban model comes from this. And the leadership is very much convinced that channeling the power of next generation information technology will enable them to do that. And that's why we had these smart cities that were being developed.
That's very interesting. I mean, there's been obviously quite a bit of a challenge for the leadership in in sort of accommodating those rural residents moving to the cities, especially if they don't have an urban hukou. So how does this smart city of Chang'an help to sort of maybe alleviate some of the issues for the rural residents or the illegal migrants in Beijing? Is that a problem that they're trying to address with Chang'an?
I think to some extent they are trying to regulate who will be able to settle there. They've announced that there will not be a hukou in Chang'an, but based on the work contract or licenses for companies that you have, you will be able to settle there. At the same time, the whole project of Chang'an, I think it's quite elitist. So we can have concerns about the rural populations that are here at present and maybe have been promised this new dream, this new rejuvenation, and because they probably don't have the skills to accompany this movement that President Xi Jinping wants to implement in Chang'an, they might have to relocate somewhere else, or we might end up in a situation where there's still a gap between the original rural population and the new residents.
So when you talk about equity and more inclusion, it's mostly focused on the urban residents.
Yes, I think so at this point. They want to have a model city that they can show off to the rest of the world. But for that, they're really trying to have the top institutions, the top talents, the top companies to join this project. So for now, they're really trying to build this kind of utopia, and probably they will have to train more talents, or at least shift the orientation of the workforce skills in the future to reflect these changes. Otherwise, we might have a situation that repeats itself and see the same problems that were in Beijing actually just translated into another area.
And you say that it's a model city, right? So how is it a model city in terms of smart cities design for the rest of China?
So for Chang'an, I think it's a model city because what was interesting is that they were able to, before experiments, smart city initiatives in a lot of different cities in China at various levels. And some of these, for example, the city brain that I mentioned before, have been selected because they were successful and are now integrated in Chang'an. So all of these successful initiatives that we've seen before can be integrated in this new model city that will serve as a world-class megalopolis in the future.
Yeah, I've got two questions on that. It sounds really interesting because it's almost like with Chang'an, I get this vision of sort of like a city from the future, as, you know, you'd get it in 50s science fiction, like the Jetsons. Like, it almost sounds like this is almost an aesthetic undertaking, sort of realizing that futuristic promise that we see on, you know, propaganda posters and making it a reality. To what extent is this really that sort of, you know, embedded in that dream of achieving modernity from that aesthetic visionary perspective? And the other, you know, slightly more, we talk about city brain here. If I'm not mistaken, this is technology developed by Alibaba. What is the role of public-private relationships in this? You know, how does the private industry play a role in building out these Chinese smart city solutions?
So first of all, regarding the aesthetics, I think, yes, you're very much right in saying that the Chinese are having this vision that is a bit futuristic. And they, for example, I mean, of course, we might think of these dystopian examples, but there's some more, I think, concrete examples of how you can implement technology at the moment. For example, in a city management perspective, you can have technology applied regulate traffic. You can have different kind of sensors that will analyze information in real time. If you have AI technology that is augmenting this integrated system, you can also have the possibility to formulate some solutions to potential emergency situations. And for them, because I think there's a lot of new threats that they've been confronted to, whether environmental, as we've seen also with the COVID-19 pandemic, public health related, or just security related, they think that by channeling all of these technologies and having also AI as a core component of that, they might be able to formulate quicker responses. And as for your question about the involvement of the public and the private sector, in this, I think that there's more incentives from the government at this point to have top companies such as Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu, to actually participate in such projects. One main model that has been promoted is the public-private partnership model. And through that, there's been already a few projects in Xi'an. For example, Baidu has developed this GPS framework that is used in conjunction with other technologies such as Huawei, for example, for the development of unmanned vehicles in the city, or just for traffic regulation in general. Except from that, Alibaba has developed the City Brain, which will be implemented in Xi'an as well, and a myriad of other companies are just involved in developing other solutions, like computing centers or other types of technology.
This vision got launched in 2017. That's about 4 years ago now. Where do we stand? Like, what can I see if I go there?
Well, when I visited the area, it was 2018, and I already saw quite a lot of development in terms of, for example, the restoration of the lake that is close to the area, but also the building of a completely new forest area, which is supposed to cover 70% of the area upon completion. So all of these were already in there. What was quite interesting was that you can see even the technology at the smallest level, because each tree that was planted actually had a QR code, and you could see all the information, who planted the tree, what kind of species it is, and just like regulates this ecosystem through just an app and data. So that was quite impressive.
And currently, where would the construction timeline be at? When, if I, let's say I live in Beijing, when do you think I could be I would be able to move there?
Well, at this point, there's already been some people that have relocated to Xi'an. Recently, they completed the resettlement building for a part of the population. So I think that we might see the first wave of new Xi'an settlers in maybe the coming month. But for the final completion of the smart city part, we might have to wait until maybe 10 to 15 years to see actually concrete results, because it's a very long process. As we said before, it's been constructed completely from scratch. So they are trying step by step and really experimenting there.
And so what's the risk? I mean, you know, we talk a lot, I think sometimes too much, you know, about these Chinese ghost towns and a whole bunch of investments into apartment buildings and shopping malls and office real estate that then stands empty. What is the risk that something like this will happen to Xiong'an, that in the end, or that you might end up with, you know, other new cities like Brasilia or Canberra that, you know, are sort of artificially designed and turned out not to be very successful as being a city? Or do we see that, you know, you're already saying that, you know, class comes in there? This is clearly a dream aimed at the Chinese well-educated urban middle class, right? It's almost Instagrammable in that sense. To what extent are we seeing that, you know, to live in Xiong'an might well become attractive, or it might become a mark of status? Is that something we see at the sociological level?
Yes, I think very much so. I think that because they are really committed to have the top institutions, the top schools, the top companies, the top research institutes, of course there will be more traction, and the projects will be much more different than other ghost towns that we've seen before. Also, it's directly endorsed and implemented by the central leadership. So this top-down approach will, I think, ensure that there will be continuous interest and attraction and just an impulse for people to move there. And by also allocating more funds and creating more incentives for people and for companies to move there, the government is trying to ensure that this dream will come to fruition.
But is there a risk that you need this centralized top-down approach, and therefore if other cities are going to emulate it without this top-down backing, they might actually end up with ghost towns because they don't have that, you know, mobilization of resources, the political commitment. So as a model, how would that work?
I think what we see currently in other cities are it's a much smaller scale. So I don't think it can be compared to Xiong'an at this point. First, at the local level, the provincial and municipal governments usually try to design their own action plans with a list of priorities. Then they can apply to the relevant ministerial authorities, so the Ministry of Housing and Urban Rural Development, the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology. These are the core institution in charge that will select cities who can experiment and implement smart city initiatives. At the same time, it's true that because there's a lot of desire for the leadership to promote these smart initiatives, and they might not have very strict regulations at this point, and they might allow cities to have maybe looser timelines. So we cannot guarantee that the standards that are promoted at the top level will always be enforced. But I think we can see in the action plans that cities are developing that they are actually really committed, because they know that it will help them develop their own economies. So they're really striving to do that.
Do you also think that they're going to try to promote Xiong'an internationally? I mean, for some African governments, they're already trying to push a number of smart cities developments, like, you know, on a blank slate, like they're doing with Xiong'an.
Yes, I think so. We can already see that through the Belt and Road Initiative. There's been a few exchange in terms of governance, and China is trying to be a model in terms of urban governance or governance in other areas for sister nations in the developing world. So now I think that it might still be a bit complicated to implement the digital parts in some of these developing countries, because some of them still do not even have the physical infrastructure to actually host these types of projects. But I think there's a lot of incentives put in place, and from other countries you can see that the reactions are quite positive.
Yeah, and CityBrain, of course, it's already being trialed in Kuala Lumpur, so you know, it's also interesting to see how cities like these really, I'm not sure it's their core purpose, but it's a nice sort of side catch that what you're really doing is you're creating the market for Chinese technological products to be trialed, to be, you know, to come into service. You know, we see this with satellite navigation as well, creating a market for Beidou products rather than, you know, the American GPS system. You know, it's really fascinating to see how that evolves. Now, you know, just before we wrap up, part of what this podcast tries to do is it tries to really open up a discussion about China, which is very often dominated by fairly narrow concerns. And so we like to conclude our episodes with something that we call the spotlight, where we ask our guest if there is one element from your research that you think deserves more attention to bring more nuance or information to the China debate, what would it be?
Maybe just continuing on the topic of the digital future of China and the smart cities, I think that it's important to keep in mind that in the future, the main factors that will drive urban governance shifts in China will probably be environmental changes, also health security, but also at the bigger level, and you mentioned that as well, because the Chinese Communist Party is so concerned about its own preservation and ensuring stability maintenance, they will more and more use technology as a way to identify and suppress the perceived threats to the regime's stability. So we will probably see a trend of integration of surveillance technology, big data in the development of future cities in China to ensure political and social control.
That's lovely. Fatoumata, thank you so much for this conversation. It was very interesting. And I forgot to mention this at the beginning, but Fatoumata is a graduate of our Leiden Bachelor Program in International Studies, and we're always very proud as an institution to see our alumni end up in interesting places. So congratulations on that as well. But it was lovely having you on board.
Thank you very much.
Linda, great that you were here with us as well today.
Yes, thank you for the conversation, Fatoumata.
And thank you all for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review wherever you get this podcast. It really helps us develop it further and bring you more topics of interest. See you next time.